Iowa is becoming more diverse, and when cultures come together in communities, there are often challenges, but there are also tremendous rewards. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we'll find out what some Iowa organizations are doing to explore and celebrate the diversity of our state. Maureen Cordy is the Director of Educational Programs at CultureAll in Des Moines. I'll talk with her and participants in Story Mob, a community storytelling event, and with Abini El-Amin, Director of the Multicultural Family Center in Dubuque. We also want to know about what's going on in your community. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Iowa is not a place known for diversity, but things are changing. We live in a global village now, and even outside of our college towns, large groups of immigrants from various places in the world have been drawn to Iowa for jobs. As cultures mingle in schools and communities around the state, there are many people working to make that transition smooth and, more important, to help us reap the rewards of diversity. This hour, we're going to talk about the efforts of some Iowa organizations, and we want to know what's going on in your community. You can send us an email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also give us a call at 866-780-9100. We're going to, in a few minutes, talk about the organization CultureAll and a storytelling project at CultureAll. But we're going to start this hour with Abini El-Amin. She is director of the Multicultural Family Center in Dubuque. Hello, Abini.
Hi, Charity. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Not a problem. I just want you to know that I've spent my lifetime waiting to be on IPR. So this is definitely a treat for me.
All right. Wonderful. Well, a short lifetime because you actually only came to Iowa about 6 months ago, right?
That is correct. Coming from Raleigh, North Carolina, where I ran a statewide organization against youth violence. And so that was Project Ricochet, Inc. of North Carolina before coming to the Multicultural Family Center of Dubuque, Iowa.
What drew you to the Multicultural Family Center in Dubuque?
Well, our mission is to empower all families and community members of Dubuque to reach potential and to build unity out of diversity. And who wouldn't appreciate a mission like that? I've spent my entire life doing training and development, so this concept of empowerment is a really important value that I have. And so to do this in various kinds of ways, whether it's social and cultural vibrancy, whether it's economic or whether it's educational, it's just been fascinating. And then if anyone ever has the opportunity to actually visit the building and the space that we reside in, you will see that it's an incredible space. It's beautiful. It's welcoming. And that was one of the biggest draws for me, is to that a city organization and the community would support an initiative like this.
And although you've only been here for 6 months, can you give me a little bit of the history of the Multicultural Family Center? How long has it been around?
The Multicultural Family Center was started in 2005 by a group of volunteers who recognized that in the community that there was a growing population of people that were not mostly, whether that been Germanic or Irish, which that's the greatest levels of ethnicity in this area. Mm-hmm. And they recognized this, and so they decided to open up a small space in downtown Dubuque. Shortly thereafter, they grew out of that. They really worked through this value that we have here in Dubuque in terms of partnering. And within 4 years, they opened the center that we reside in now. And so this is on Central Avenue, right down the street from City Hall, right down the street from the courthouse and the police station and many of the places where people can get support and where the services of the city reside as well.
When the Multicultural Family Center was formed, as you mentioned, the city was becoming more diverse, as many communities in Iowa have been over the last decade or two decades. Were there problems that were identified that the founders were concerned about?
Well, I think the city of Dubuque has had a history of incidents, but by and large, those incidents are rare. But when they occur, they're burgeoning because this is a small community of about 58,000 residents, and but it is highly developed in terms of its infrastructure and the people that reside within it in terms of being very intellectually sound. So you have this group of people that are mostly homogenous, and they're welcoming newcomers into their environments, and so there's challenges with that, like any kind of human dynamics would create when you have new people coming into the system. So we don't have a lot of incident, but when we do, we try to nix it as soon as possible. We work on a lot of civic engagement. We want to know what citizens want to see happen in order to solve dilemmas. And so I think that this is a city that's incredibly proactive when it comes to any kind of social or human dynamics.
And can you give me an idea of some of the groups that have moved into Dubuque that are growing? Obviously, there are people from all over the world that live in Dubuque, but there are ethnic groups that have gotten to be larger and are their own sub-communities in some ways.
Yes, that's correct. We have about 5 to 6% African American in the city of Dubuque. Many of those people are coming from the Midwest themselves. But then, of course, as you had noted, there are plenty of people that are coming from around the world as a result of Loras College, Clark University, and the University of Dubuque, as well as the other educational opportunities available. And that is actually where lots of this diversity tends to come from. And then if we're good, then we can encourage people to stay in this area and then, of course, grow that diversity. So we have about 5 to 6% African Americans. We have anywhere between 2 to 3% Hispanic. We have a large Marshallese population, and we're very excited and happy that that population continues to grow. And we also have a number of Native populations, Native American as well here.
Now, I want to talk about the events that you have at the Multicultural Family Center. I get press releases from you all the time, and it sounds like there are a lot of really fantastic events that go on at the center. But first, I mean, do people seek you out who are new to the community?
That is our hope. That is our dream, Charity. That is what we are working hard at it every single day, every single second. So, and that's part of the outreach and making sure that we're in the local newspapers, that we can take opportunities to do what we're doing today to get our message out and our word out that we actually exist and that we are an incredible space with incredible love. That, and what we want to do is then, of course, do exactly what our mission says to do, and that's empower people to reach their fullest potential in a welcoming environment. So some of the activities that we have, they are many, as you had mentioned, centering around family empowerment, lots of youth empowerment, teen empowerment. In fact, our teen programs are some of our strongest programs. We have a mentoring, a tutoring program. We have our Future Talk program. We have Teen Night, which is incredibly fun. I find myself wanting to come out of my office and take part in all of those activities with the teens. And one of the reasons is because we know that there is a gap with teen services, and in particular between 13 and 18. So we want to make sure that we serve that gap. And then we also have our LGBTQ teen group, which also meets here. And again, that is encompassing this concept of us being welcoming, making sure that people feel at home, making sure that they feel good in the skin that they live in.
And you mentioned a gap for teens who are ages 13 to 18. What is the gap? What kinds of services do you think are lacking for these students?
Well, for us, it's a place for teens to feel comfortable. We have an opening space where teens can come and study. They, again, can find mentors and tutors to help them to be empowered in their educational and career pursuits. And but I think more than anything, it's a safe environment where they know that, again, it's going to be safe, that they have adult mentors that are going to make sure that they are well provided for. And we always, of course, when you have your teen populations, we serve yummy food.
Well, and yummy food seems to be a recurring theme in a lot of your events.
That's the real pull. That's the real benefit. So, but I think that's the biggest piece there. And this is not unlike other communities who are trying to figure out how they can serve teen populations. And we also have a teen council. So when there are things that they feel like that they need, then we also try to open up and make sure that we provide for their concerns and their needs. We have adult programming. So we do everything from health and fitness. So we have a wonderful partnership with one of our local businesses, Body and Soul, and they provide yoga for us, for our adult population. We also do a Buddha belly dance. We have hip hop for our younger kids in our health and fitness initiative. And we also provide weed for seniors in partnership with the Salvation Army.
Well, and I was looking at information about your cultural cooking night. It looks like you do use the draw of food to help bridge the gap between cultures.
Absolutely. And if anyone is in earshot of this program, we're having our Russian cooking night on this Thursday from 5:30 until 7. And we're going to be serving beef stroganoff, the Russian, authentic Russian, Polish influence way. So we've got lots of people coming in from that part of the world who are going to come in and talk to us about their Russian experience. Absolutely. So we try as much as possible to expose the participants who come into the center of anything that is worldly, global, and that many times is food. Food really gets to the heart of the matter in many ways, and then we can entice people to then take a look at some of our other cultural programs, also our language programs and cultural programs. So we have a Taste of the World that happens in March. We have a Cinco de Mayo that takes place in May. We have our Juneteenth celebration that takes place in June. We celebrate many of the other holidays throughout the year. This coming year, we'll do a celebration around Chinese New Year. So as much as possible, we're trying to reach into communities. We're trying to encourage communities that this is the place for them to be themselves. In December of this month, we'll have Joffrey Tenolabu from Atlanta, who is the consulate and ambassador, and he will be coming in to launch our All Africa program to make sure that people in the African diaspora, that they feel comfortable in this community. In fact, a large number of them work at IBM and John Deere and some of the other places in the city. And so what we have heard is that on the weekends, they tend to travel back to Wisconsin, Chicago, the various areas, most likely anywhere between 3 and 4 hours in the area. And as opposed to them doing that, it's a real concern for me for them to want to
stay in the community,
in the city of Dubuque. Absolutely. So we are working very hard to see that happens. Again, there are 56 countries in Africa, and just even 2 months ago, we had a program, and we had over 15 countries represented.
Wow.
Right here in the city
of
Dubuque.
Well, Abeni, we're going to take a short break, and I will want you to hang on the line for a while. We're going to talk about Cultural in Des Moines in a moment, and you can listen through that conversation. Then I'll bring you back into the conversation as we talk about things happening across Iowa. Abeni Alamin is director of the Multicultural Family Center in Dubuque. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the efforts of some Iowa organizations to celebrate diversity in our communities and help make the transition into a more diverse society in the state of Iowa. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll open up the phones. We want to know about what's happening in your community. We want to know about what events you feel have really made a difference in celebrating diversity. Or maybe if you come here from somewhere else in the world, tell us about the things that have actually made you feel welcome in Iowa. Or you can also point out problems as well. We'd love to hear from you. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also post on our Facebook page, or you can call 866-780-9100. With me now is Maureen Cordy. She is Director of Educational Programs at Cultural in Des Moines. Hello, Maureen.
Hello, Charity.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
And first of all, tell us what Cultural is all about.
Cultural is a Des Moines-based nonprofit that serves all of Iowa. We teach about world culture through a culture's traditions, holidays, recreational activities, fine arts, foods, lifestyles, and most importantly, stories. We work in universities, in schools, with businesses, cities, and with festivals. We represent 6 continents, and we have well over 110 ambassadors who go into these areas and teach through workshops and performance.
And you have been on this show before because you are a wonderful storyteller. Can you tell me how long Culture All has been around, and what was the impulse for founding it?
Culture All is 8 years old. Sherry Gupta is our executive director, and Sherry founded it and started the organization. She decided to start Culture All about 8.5 years ago when she was asked by a neighbor to help with a culture day and to get people in to talk to the kids about different cultures around the world. And when she saw how exciting it was, she thought that every child and every adult should have this opportunity available to them at any time, not just during a school culture day. So she began Culture All at that time.
And how did you get involved?
I'm retired from the Department of Cultural Affairs, Iowa State Historical Museum, where I directed a statewide theater program on history. And when I retired, I had been on the cultural catalog for over 6 years, and Sherry called me and asked if I would come on board with her. So my retirement actually lasted about 5 minutes.
All right. Well, I want to focus on your Story Mob event, which is coming up. One of your Story Mob events is coming up on Thursday at 7 p.m. at the Ritual Cafe, and it's presented by Culture All and the Des Moines Social Club. And we'll talk about storytelling as part of the mission of Culture All. A little later on, we'll get into some of your other programs when we open up the phones and find out what's going on all over the state of Iowa. But first of all, tell me what Story Mob is.
Story Mob is one of our public programs, and it is a quarterly event that we hold normally at the Social Club in Des Moines, but the Social Club is in some construction, and so we're having it at Ritual Cafe. People gather, and 2 to 3 cultural ambassadors from Culture All tell a 5-minute story on the same subject. And most of those people that tell from Culture All were born in different countries. So when they tell a story on the subject of something like lunchbox, it's completely different than someone's here in the United States. After they tell as an example, the mic is open to the audience and people can come up and tell their own 5-minute story on that same subject. They are judged by a panel of 3 judges and also by the audience, who marks down a score from 1 to 10 on a piece of paper. They wad that up, and then when I get up and MC, they toss all those pieces of papers at me. And at the end of the evening, first place is awarded by the 3 judges, and then those who did not win first place, all the tellers that told, get up and grab 3 sheets of that paper from the floor, add up the score, and the one with the highest score is the second prize winner, which is a $50 prize. And then one person from the audience that we select chooses the third prize, and the third prize winner gets a cultural mug and 2 free tickets to the next Story Mob.
And this is something that happens 4 times a year?
Yes, every quarter.
And you also have a storytelling class as well, right?
Yes, we have several storytelling classes through Culture All. Right now, we're just finishing up a photo, film, and story ethnography program at the Metro West Alternative High School in Urbandale. 7 students have been involved in this, and in a little over 20 sessions, we have taught them to tell a story through a photograph, a short film, and then, of course, their own personal story. And those stories speak to their culture and what type of culture in which they live, how they accept that culture, how other people accept it. Then we've been teaching a 14-week session at Des Moines Public Schools Central Academy through the Talented and Gifted program. And 7 students there have come for the last 14 weeks for 2.5 hours every Wednesday afternoon. And they have been taught by Yvonne Healy from Ireland, Andy Offutt Irwin, one of the top 3 storytellers in the United States, from Georgia, Eugene Frasick, a Sioux Indian, Tim Tingle, Choctaw Indian from Omaha, and a master puppeteer, and myself and some other visiting storytellers.
All right. And I want to bring Tom Fisher into the conversation now. Tom, you have been involved in this program at Central Academy. Your home school is Callanan Middle School, and you're in eighth grade, right?
Yep, that's right.
Well, welcome to the show, Tom.
Thanks. I'm really glad to be here.
And have you been involved in this most recent storytelling workshop? Or is this something you've done in the past?
This is my first time.
All right. And what have you learned over the last weeks?
A lot of things. One of the most important parts of it is, you know, we're all in eighth grade and we've never done a lot of public speaking. That's just not what they teach you. And that's been really important and it's been really nice to learn.
Has there been one of the storytellers that has come to do the workshop that has really inspired you the most? Can you tell me about the one that your favorite?
I don't know. Everybody said the puppeteer was really nice, but I was sick and I couldn't see him. So, Tim Tingle was really cool. He was the Choctaw Indian. He did a lot of really neat storytelling, and I thought he was really cool.
And you're going to be involved in Story Mob on Thursday. Will this be your first time up on a stage telling a story?
Yes, it will be.
And Maureen, I know that there's a theme that is chosen for each Story Mob event. What is the theme for this event?
This quarter, it is Warm Blanket.
All right.
And Tom has, about 2 weeks ago at class, I told the kids that I wanted them to create a story on Warm Blanket. And I said I'd give them 15 minutes to get started and then we'd discuss it. And about 3 minutes later, Tom raised his hand and he said, I have it all done, Maureen. And he stood up and told a complete story.
Wow.
And so I said, I definitely think you should be at Story Mob.
All right. Well, Tom, and we're going to put you on the spot. Would you be willing to tell your story for
us today?
All right. Go ahead.
There once was a small boy. He lived in a small village in the middle of the desert in a war zone, so there was always the threat of the soldiers finding his village. He had dark skin, almost like coffee beans. He had raven black hair. Almost everything about him was dark, actually, except his eyes. He had bright green eyes that were always friendly and kind of reminded you of fire when you go out camping and, you know, you just feel happy inside. So one day this boy goes out to the oasis that only he knows about to play, and he sees this blanket off the side. He goes over to it. It's pearly white with a design on the middle of pure gold. He doesn't know what it is, but instantly feels connected to it, almost as if it's magic. He picks it up and takes it with him to play. Finally, when it becomes dusk, he knows he has to go back to the village. As he does, he hears the sound of gunfire. His sister had told him what it sounded like, but this was completely different. It was sounding like the world had ripped in half. He got there and knew his worst fear. The soldiers had come and found them. He immediately ran back to his house and hid underneath the blanket and prayed that no one would find him. Two soldiers came into the house, but they somehow didn't see him. He hid there and eventually fell asleep, ignoring the sounds of people dying and all the bloodshed. Finally, he wakes up in the morning, and he goes outside. It's completely quiet. Everyone except him had been killed. He knows he has to leave, but he doesn't know where to go, so he starts walking. And then he starts feeling the blanket, gently tugging. He starts following the direction of the tug. Eventually, he sees a huge city. There are skyscrapers that reach up way past, almost touching the stars. There are all sorts of different colored cars. He goes straight to the police center and gets put up to an orphanage. He stays there for about a month, and then one day two people come in, a man and a woman. The man has caramel colored skin with also raven dark hair that's cut short, with dark brown eyes. The woman also has caramel skin with somewhat lighter hair going down to her shoulders. Her eyes are blue and also friendly. They're both rich. You can tell that from their nice clothes. They immediately pick the boy to come back with them. He grows up and he lives a good life. He decides to speak out against violence in small villages like his. As he does that for a while, and then one day he goes into a conference that he hopes will end it. As he goes there, someone jumps out with a gun. Somehow they miss. He keeps going, and eventually he gets to the conference and manages to end it. The next morning he wakes up. He always sleeps with his blanket because he knows it protects him. But when that morning he wakes up and the blanket's gone, when he knows it, he's fine with that because he knows it's moved on to someone else who needs its help.
Tom Fisher, an eighth grader from Des Moines, telling his story that he'll be telling at the Story Mob event on Thursday evening in Des Moines as part of a Culture All. And with me also is Maureen Cordy. She's the Director of Educational Programs at Culture All in Des Moines. This hour, we're talking about different organizations in Iowa that are celebrating diversity and doing their best to introduce different cultures to young people and older people in the state of Iowa. Tom, what was your inspiration for this story?
At my school, Callanan, it's a lot more diverse than most of the other schools, and there are a lot of war refugees, and I've heard a couple of their stories, and so that's what got the main idea for it, and then I just developed the rest off warm blanket.
With the students who have shared their refugee stories with you, what does that mean to you when you learn about somebody else who has been through such a very different experience from a sort of a safe and secure childhood in Iowa?
I don't know. It kind of makes me appreciate everything that I have, you know, never having to worry that much about stuff like that. And also, it's also kind of sad, you know, just to hear about it.
Maureen, what is your hope with the different stories that get told at Story Mob and the different stories that get told when you hold these workshops for students?
Well, stories are history, and history is the thing that makes us real. And when people have a foundation, when they know their own history, they have a greater sense of self-esteem. And when other people know their story, then other people are more likely to be friendly with that person. We fear what we don't understand. And once we understand something and we understand someone's culture, why they do what they do, what their traditions are and the history behind them, then we're more likely to be friendly with them, to shake hands with them, to ask them questions, to invite them over to our home. Story is basically the basis of our lives. And everywhere you hear someone saying to someone else, well, tell me your story. Well, he shared his story with me, and now I understand him more. And so when we learn about other cultures through story, then we're more united, more peaceful.
What does it do for the storytellers? What is your hope that for a student like Tom to get out of this experience and telling a story that, in this case, is not his own?
Well, I would hope that he would do as other storytellers do that make a living through storytelling, and that is study geography and anthropology and archaeology and linguistics and literature and those types of things from other cultures, so that he can go and recover some of those lost stories, those lost languages, those lost dances, and bring history forward for other people so that other people will understand that culture. Storytellers do not just perform the stories that they know. They research and find out the story behind a story, why it was told in a village, how it changed that population, how it traveled from one culture to the other. It is not only an art form, but a science. And I would hope that Tom would be interested enough to maybe do some research and continue to tell stories.
Can you give me an example, Maureen, of something you've observed through these classes that makes you feel like, yeah, we are doing what we want to do with this?
Well, at the Metro Arts Camp or the Metro West Campus in Urbandale, I've noticed that the kids are willing to share their stories with one another, and the other students understand that, and so they empathize with them, and they make comments like, "Yeah, I know what you mean. I've been there. Oh, yeah, I can tell that." And I think they're having a deeper understanding of each other's. I also think that storytelling breaks down that fear of public speaking and just having a conversation with someone else. And I see that these kids everywhere, after they take a storytelling class, are more willing to raise their hand and say, "I'll come up front and I'll demonstrate. I'll speak about that. I'll do that."
Do you try to make an effort to make the students who are part of these storytelling classes, do you try to make an effort to make sure that the classroom is diverse as well?
Yes, we do, very much so. Anyone is welcome when we open up these classes to take them. And in Des Moines Public Schools with the Talented and Gifted program, we do have diversity, and also at Metro Campus in Urbandale. And, of course, when we go into schools and universities and businesses all over the state, there's always diversity present.
Right. Well, Tom, you were very, very brave to tell your story on the radio today. How are you feeling about standing up on the stage on Thursday?
Pretty good. I mean, I think this is probably a little more hard to do than just because I know that there are a lot more people listening to this than there will be at Story Mob.
Right, a little more intimidating. Well, thank you for being brave for us today.
Glad I could.
Tom Fisher is an eighth grade student in Des Moines at Callanan Middle School, and he's also been part of the Central Academy program with Cultural. We will continue our conversation about Cultural and Story Mob, and also what other organizations are doing around the state of Iowa to celebrate diversity in a moment. Maureen Cordy will stay with us. She is Director of Educational Programs at Cultural in Des Moines. We'll also hear another story in just a moment, and we would love to hear from you. 866-780-9100. Tell us about a program in your community that celebrates diversity. Maybe if you came here from somewhere else in the world, was there an experience that made you feel part of Iowa? Maybe you don't feel like you're part of Iowa. What has prevented you from feeling that way? Tell us your story, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about organizations in Iowa that celebrate and educate about diversity in the state of Iowa. Maureen Cordy is here. She's Director of Educational Programs at Cultural in Des Moines. And also joining us now is Dawn Martinez-Oropeza. She is Executive Director of Latinas Latinos al Éxito, and that translates as Latinos Towards Success. She's also a Story Mob Cultural Ambassador. Hello, Dawn.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And you will be telling a story on Thursday as well, right?
I will be telling a story. I am a cultural ambassador. I don't usually do storytelling, but since I did the photo part of the project with Metro West, I thought if these kids have to get up there on stage, then I'm going to do it too. But I am not a storyteller.
Well,
I wish I could be.
I guess you are now.
Yeah, I guess so. We'll see.
All right. Well, tell me a little bit about yourself. I mean, as a cultural ambassador, what do you bring to the students?
Well, I do a variety of things for Cultural. Me and my husband, Juan Carlos, we do Aztec dancing. So we try to bring an awareness to the history of the indigenous people of Mexico through dance and storytelling. I guess I do a little storytelling in history. And we also do things like I talk on Cesar Chavez because I work for the Chavez Foundation. We've done a Latino dinner for adults. And a variety of other things. We've talked about posadas. We've talked about anytime there's a celebration or a holiday coming up, we'll change and work with that. So,
and as we talked about earlier, all of the stories that will be told on Thursday will be surrounding the theme of warm blanket.
Yes.
Would you tell us your story, please?
And honestly, this morning I was going to tell a story, because when it came up the first time, about my niece who I took care of when she was 16, and the only thing that really made her happy, the only thing that brought her comfort, was a nurse named Lucky who brought her warm blankets from the dryer. And this morning, after a conversation with my husband this weekend, I'm changing my story to talk about him bringing home a warm blanket. From a flea market, and the difference in cultural values, and also kind of talking a little bit about the immigration system in the United States and what that kind of does to my husband and his his feelings of providing for the family. And so it is not 100% prepared. And maybe I think Tom might have freaked me out a little bit, and I can't compete. So I will refrain. People will have to come out on Thursday to hear it.
All right. Fair enough. That's a good teaser for us. What do you get out of being a cultural ambassador?
I love being a cultural ambassador. I think Cultural is a great organization. Every time I go into a school, they get a little bit confused with me and my husband and our feathers and drums and things we bring in. And it shows me that even the administration and even the secretaries need to know a little bit more about our culture when they confuse us with being from Africa or other places. But it's being with those students, and it's always the one or two students who raise their hand and they're so proud to let us know that they're from Mexico, or their great-grandmother was, or their mother was. Or even we've had an Italian student, they could relate. Like, all of a sudden there's somebody in the classroom who represents their culture and is proud of their culture. And so it gives them a moment to shine within the classroom. And I wish I had that growing up here in Iowa, that somebody would come in and I had role models that were Latino. So,
and you felt that that was something that was lacking in your childhood?
Yes, definitely.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up here in Des Moines. My father's from Mexico, and my mother's family are Jewish immigrants from Russia.
Do you feel that Iowa in general, and not just Des Moines, I know that you do work around the state, do you mm-hmm. think that Iowa has become a more welcoming place since your childhood?
Definitely. I keep going back to stories, mm-hmm. kind of funny. Beautiful stories about traveling around the state. And one of my favorite ones was I was helping the Historical Society in, and now it's skipping my head,
Storm Lake.
No, not Storm Lake, but Steamboat Rock, Iowa.
All
very
right.
small town.
And, very beautiful small town.
Yes. Oh, my gosh, it's gorgeous, especially at this time of the year. And I went in, and there was a woman sweeping her stoop across from the state historical building. And I asked them, I said, well, do you have Mexican immigrants here or Latino immigrants? And she's like, oh, yes, we need to tell, we're collecting their stories and their history. And I thought, oh, yeah, Mexico has a rich history of, culture and traditions. And she goes, no, we're collecting the stories of them here with us now, because it's historical that they're joining us. And it really touched my heart. So I've seen beautiful stories.
I do want to open up the phones and give people an opportunity to talk about things that are happening around the rest of the state in different communities around the state, like Steamboat Rock. And you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me is Maureen Cordy. She is the Director of Educational Programs at Cultural in Des Moines. Don Martinez-Oropeza is Executive Director of Latinas, Latinos, El Éxito, and also a Cultural Ambassador with Cultural. And I want to bring Abini El-Amin back into the conversation. Welcome back, Abini.
Oh, thank you, Charity.
From the Multicultural Family Center in Dubuque. And we do have a couple of callers on the line who want to share their stories. Kimlin is on the line in Pella. Hello, Kimlin.
Hi, my name is Kimlin Bappi. Shout out to Maureen Cordy and Don Martinez-Oropeza and Charity Nubby. Love your show.
Oh, thanks.
I am from Singapore, and by some chance, I'm also a cultural ambassador. And I was just listening this morning on the way to Central College, Pella. And thanks to Cultural, I am having, to Maureen Cordy, actually, I am having a solo exhibition called Kimlin Ton Bappi, Pranakan Legacy. And it was through organizations like Cultural All and Iowa Asian Alliance that I stopped being ashamed of being from another culture. Since leaving Singapore at the age of 13, I tried to pass as an American, which I am an American, but I am an American of color. And it was, I always tried to fit in as best as I could, and it was in Iowa that when I started to see that my children needed to embrace their heritage more. I started to make friends with people like Sherry Gupta from Cultural and the Iowa Asian Alliance, that I started being able to be proud of my heritage again. And so I now live in Mount Pleasant with my family, and I'm back being an educator in hopes to share my story and my heritage with my students in Mount Pleasant, Iowa.
Wow. Well, what made you feel ashamed as a child? Do you know?
When I went to a British Singapore school until I was 13, and then I moved to Hong Kong and I went to an international American school. And in eighth grade, and I love Tom's story, by the way, but when I was in eighth grade, I went to an American school, and the other students made fun of the way I spoke and the way I dressed because it wasn't American enough.
Mm.
And it was very painful. And from a very talkative person, I quit talking for half a year. And then during the summer between my eighth grade and ninth grade year, I promised myself that I would eradicate and eliminate anything that made me stand out.
Wow. So do you feel like your kids are proud of their cultural heritage today?
Yes, I think so. They broker two cultures. I'm married to a German-American, and so they love being Asian, and they love being a German.
Wonderful.
So, but they, too, were starting to get teased in Urbandale when we lived in Urbandale, and I started to realize that they needed more role models to talk about their skin color and the foods they ate, we ate at home. And the fact that we had a global perspective and an international perspective.
Well, Kimlin, thank you so much for calling and sharing your story today.
Well, thank you for taking my call, and blessings to Cultural and all the other wonderful organizations that represent diversity.
Well, thanks again. And Abini, when you listen to Kim Lin's story, you talked about earlier the need for young people to celebrate their culture. Does that sound familiar to you? Is that a typical story from people that you encounter who have grown up in this country but are of another ethnicity?
Absolutely. One of the things that the Cultural All director had said was that it is incredibly important to know thyself. In fact, that's one of the mantras that I use around here all the time, is once you know yourself, then you can then begin to build on self-esteem. You can feel better about then your ethnicity, the community that you live in, and then it just continues to expand from there. So I think that that's very important for us to realize in the work that we do, is to always pull that out. I'm so impressed to hear about what Cultural All is doing in the community and in schools, and getting young people involved in that whole concept of knowing thyself, loving thyself, their ethnicity, no matter where they come from.
And Hoyi is on the line now in Ames. Hello, Hoyi.
Hi.
Hi there. What's your story?
Oh, I just wanted to share something I experienced last year with my friends together. I'm originally from China, but I'm a new citizen right now. And I have lots of friends on campus. They're from, like, France or Germany or India. And then last year, we decided to make a show, a small show for Visha. It's kind of like a homecoming. It's a big thing for Iowa State University.
Yes. Yes.
So we don't know where should we perform our show. Then we just randomly signed one on the Visha list. And till the day we performed, and we noticed that's a African-American society. So that's their program. And we were quite nervous. We don't know if they welcome us or not, because our show is talking about all kinds of immigrants go through the custom. It's kind of a funny show.
All right. You wound up signing up to be on the stage that was sponsored by an African-American sorority. Is that what?
Yeah, it's on campus.
Okay.
African-American society. Yeah.
All right.
So, yeah. And after we performed, they were so happy. They cheered for us. And we noticed actually sometimes, you know, when, we have to try to cross the border, to talk with different people from different backgrounds, then they always welcome.
Oh, that's a wonderful story. It sounds like you had to be very brave.
Yeah. We never expected we will perform there. You know, we saw maybe just some random program, but we don't know. It's a specific group, and they were really nice.
That's a great story. Hoi-Yi, thank you so much for calling and sharing.
Okay. Well, you have a good day.
Yeah, you too. And Maureen, I mean, listening to Hoi-Yi's story, that sounds like an experience that is definitely in the tradition of Culture-All.
Absolutely. Culture-All brings all cultures together because people living here that perhaps were born in Africa want to know about the people living here that perhaps were born in China. And so we bring all of those people together in our events. We have a program called Living Culture Concerts where we fully immerse people into a culture in an evening through foods, discussion, games, music, those kinds of things. And many times we find that we're joining people in that particular community together. When we had our Kenyan House concert, many people came from Kenya that are living in Des Moines, and they didn't know all these other people were here. And so they were so thrilled to find people from their own culture and then meet people from other cultures also.
Well, Dawn, we've been hearing some very positive stories from callers, and obviously we're celebrating diversity on the program today. But there have been a lot of people over the years, whether they're from another state or from another country, who have said things like, well, it's really hard to become an Iowan. If you move into the state of Iowa or particularly into a small town, you're considered to be an outsider forever. Do you still hear some of those stories as well?
You know, we are in seven communities, Latinas al Éxito. And so we have AAUW, American Association of University Women, who have started our organization and have embraced the groups of girls that came from different cultures. And so they're working to get them to stay in school, give them the tools to succeed in high school, and then go on to college. So I really have beautiful stories from those other sites. And we just started in Ottumwa and got some pictures sent to me today. And they have boys and girls. And our organization's really working with the parents as well to kind of teach them about the difference in culture of how you look at the at school in general, the institution of school. And we've been really blessed. And our girls throughout our programs have really been accepted and mentored, which we're a mentoring program to do better in school. So,
well, Dawn, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Dawn Martinez Oropeza is Executive Director of Latinas Latinos al Éxito. She's also a Story Mob Cultural Ambassador. Maureen Cordy is the Director of Educational Programs at Culture-All in Des Moines. And Story Mob is coming up Thursday at 7 p.m. at Ritual Cafe, sponsored by Culture-All and the Des Moines Social Club. Maureen, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Charity. I would like to invite everyone to come Thursday night to Story Mob, whether they have a story to tell or not.
Right.
It's just as fun to listen as it is to tell.
All right. And Abini Alamin, thank you so much for being here today.
Not a problem. And likewise, I would love to invite all people in the area of Dubuque to join us on our Thursday night Spice Cultural Cooking Night. We'll be celebrating Russia on that evening, so you are welcomed. You are welcomed. You are so welcome.
Wonderful. Albini Alamin is director of the Multicultural Family Center in Dubuque. This is Talk of Iowa, and with me now is Ben Kiefer, host of River to River. Hello, Ben.
Hey, Charity, coming up at noon today, former Labor Secretary Robert Reich will be joining us. He's got a new film out. It's called Inequality for All. It's now in theaters, in fact, showing tonight in Iowa City. Time magazine named him one of the 10 most effective cabinet secretaries of the 20th century. We'll talk about income distribution, if it's getting worse, and if it's getting worse, Charity, why do we care? What does it matter in the grand scheme of things? Does that interest you?
That is interesting. And you're going to be part of this live event tonight, too, right?
Actually, yes. I'll be moderating a panel discussion tonight in Iowa City following that film.
All right. River to River coming up today at noon. This is Talk of Iowa. Tomorrow on the show, fried walleye and cherry pie, Midwestern writers on food. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.